cruising through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house. And now I'm old.
On a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning to you, talking cotton this Arizona Hour, and looking out the window, there isn't a cloud in the sky. But you ever just enjoy sitting back and watching clouds pass by and play with your kids? You know, what can you pick out of the cloud formations?
Sure.
I was doing that. It makes me think of the one time I did that with Remy. A plane was coming across. I said, Remy, where do you think that plane's going? He sat up at me, looked at me in the most matter-of-fact way and said, the airport.
Dad, the airport.
Good answer, son. He is going to
my
the
next
airport.
Question would have been, now what gate is he going to be parked at?
The first time I took you on an airplane ride, the first question out of your mouth was, how'd the clouds get down there?
How'd that do that? I think just about every American has done that and enjoyed cloud watching. But in the West, where we've got big open skies and big open spaces and lots of mountains, we also name likeness of rock formations to different things. Off the top of my head, Camelback Mountain, and it's got the Praying Monk.
Praying Monk.
Mummy Mountain. Frog Rock out in Congress. Yeah. Weaver's Needle and the Superstition. Four Peaks. In Lake Havasu, they have the Sleeping Indian, best seen at night as the sun is setting. It's the silhouette of an Indian warrior laying on its back by three mountain ranges coming together. You can travel out. There's actually even Havasu nighttime sunset cruises. It'll hold up to six people on a little pontoon boat. It'll take you out. It's about 6 nautical miles north of Thompson's Bay, and you get to sit there and look back to the sun setting in the west, and you're looking back to the east in the Arizona mountains, and you can see the Sleeping Indian.
Oh.
I want to go to Lake Havasu now. I've been there many times, and learning more about all the research, it's we have to go back now and experience all these other things that we cover.
All the things you've learned about. I like the south end of the lake at Havasu Springs.
That's your place?
Right, located right there in the canyon. Well, it's the best water skiing because it's the one place the lake is protected from the winds. So you got great water skiing back through the canyons. I love that area.
Water in Arizona, and that's a big part of why the cotton industry's changed a little bit here in the state of Arizona.
That's correct. You know, water's always been and is still a very big issue in any agriculture, and particularly in cotton. And so it's a precious commodity, and, as I mentioned, the production of cotton in Arizona has declined. And there's several reasons. A water situation is one. Economics is a major one because cotton yields have certainly increased. But the price of cotton today is, and it varies, but it's in the 60, 70 cent range right now. That's certainly not profitable for anybody. So that's a factor. But the one thing about it is that Arizona, when I came here, was probably getting about 2.5 bales an acre. That was a good yield. Today, they're getting about 4+ bales an acre. So that has certainly helped. But again, the economics are very tough for growing cotton in Arizona. It's the most expensive place, probably Arizona and California, the
really?
Two most expensive places to grow cotton. Oh, yeah. Because you've got to pay for the water.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the great weather. You have the sunshine. You don't have to worry about that. But look, over in Mississippi and places like that, they have some irrigation. But generally, they depend on, rainwater. So, or if they have water, it's very cheap water compared to Arizona. So land is expensive in Arizona. Water is expensive. So it's a very expensive place to grow cotton.
Now, you mentioned Mississippi, but that Pima cotton, was known in Arizona. Is there any reason they don't? Does it not grow in more humid climates? Does it not produce as well?
No, Pima is really likes a very warm, dry climate. I mean, the Egyptian cotton is, along the Nile, the same type of weather conditions, basically. But it likes dry, very hot, desert-type climate, so it does very well there. And that's basically, they've made attempts to grow it back in the southeast, but hadn't been very successful. And cotton, Pima particularly, the quality is everything. It has to be the highest quality because it sells for about, you know, almost double right now, double the price of regular cotton. Regular cotton today is 70 cents in Arizona. Pima is probably $1.30, $1.40, $1.50 a pound. So it has to be very high quality. And you don't want rain on it and things like that. In the southeast, you know, about harvest time, you'll start getting rains and those kind of things. That deteriorates the quality of Pima. So it's California and Arizona and extreme west El Paso region of Texas is where most of the Pima is grown. And today, 95% of it's grown in the San Joaquin of California.
And where is the biggest market for that? Where does it go? Most of that go?
Good question. Most of it, you know, we don't have a textile industry in the United States anymore, a very small one. So most of it goes to China, India, Pakistan, where they make most of the textiles. A lot of it goes into home products like sheets, towels, and things like that. Those are made generally in India, Pakistan, China. But a lot of it goes to real fine apparel. And again, that big textile industry is not in the U.S. It's mainly in Asia and South Asia. Everything from Bangladesh to Indonesia to used to be Japan. When I first started, Japan was our major customer, and they made very fine textiles. Japan and Switzerland were too. But they are like the United States. They can't compete competitively against the Asia countries. So their textile industry is basically diminished also.
And a follow-up to this interview that we're going to have in a couple weeks is with the Kimes Ranch. Amanda Kimes, are you familiar with them?
No.
So they make blue jeans, Kimes Ranch blue jeans, and they were made in America until the Cone Textile shut down its plant.
Yeah.
And so we're going to have a follow-up with them because their whole state is it's going to be American made, and they're right here in Arizona.
Yeah.
Well, Wrangler just introduced a new line of jeans that's coming back to 100% American made as well. And me personally, a couple of years ago, took a stance. It's going to be American made, or I'm not going to buy it. This shirt I had to order out of Houston, Schaefer's Western Wear, to find a true American made Western shirt. And so all my shirts I order from Schaefer's, because Kimes doesn't make American-made Western shirts. They have T-shirts, but not a nice collared denim shirt. So that'll be a follow-up in bringing what you know could possibly result in Wrangler bringing a line of jeans back to America. And not only just the cotton, but the rivets. It's going to be sewn in America. You know, everything from the cotton to the end product. So we're excited about that.
Yeah. Well, the denim industry is one that has somewhat maintained the places in the U.S. They've done better than some of the other type fabrics, but still a lot of it has moved offshore. Mm-hmm. Most of it has moved offshore.
Yeah, I got a preview of that when Rachel was in North Carolina and we went out to visit, and you just drive down any town and empty warehouse, and you know what were all these? That was all the textile.
Yeah, every little town in North Carolina, South Carolina, basically had a textile operation. Very few of them left. It's very sad. There are still a few, and there's some very successful, but very few of them.
So here's something I didn't think about, and may not be putting you on the spot here. But you had mentioned cotton as one of the five C's. We've got citrus, cattle, copper, and climate behind those. When were the five C's established?
Boy, you've got me. I don't know. I would say probably in the 20s or 30s. I'm guessing, but I don't know.
There's a lot of people at Arizona Office of Tourism that now say there are seven C's.
What are the other two?
Cacti and canyons.
The bringing in more tourism.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grand Canyon, most visited.
Seven C's.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Well, I tell you what, when we get cousins in from Louisiana, that's the first thing they want to see.
That's right.
Where's the cactus? Show me the saguaros.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
So. Yeah. Well, we enjoyed having you on this Saturday morning and sharing a little bit more about the cotton industry here in Arizona. That it's still one of the five C's, not as big a part as it used to be, but you know, they always say the farmer's most profitable crop is builders.
Well, that's right. Houses have taken over a lot of farmland and since I've been here in the last 40 years.
Well, it's down in Pima County and Pinal County.
Pinal.
Where they were just on the very verge of losing their CAP allotment. And I guess that stage one rationing has been pushed back now, at least a year, year and a half, because of the snowfall in the Rockies this year.
Yeah.
And Powell and the Colorado River and Green River and all that's, I guess, in pretty good shape. Yeah. But you talk about the price of water. I mean, Central Arizona farmers are the first ones that lose the CAP water. So then we're going ground pumping, and, I mean, you're only talking more expensive then,
aren't
you?
More expensive, yeah. The depth you have to go and the cost of putting in the wells and pumps and that is very expensive. And it's controversial, too.
Yeah.
You know, so they get into political situations with it. So it's a tough situation. And the one area where they have more adequate water is in the Yuma area. You know, they've got very good water conditions there, and that agriculture is doing very well in Yuma. Not so much cotton. There is still some cotton there, but mainly, you know, the lettuce and those industries there.
You were talking about groundwater. Did you see Bruce Babbitt's column yesterday about groundwater pumping?
I did not. No, I didn't.
It's some pretty scary statistics. I mean, you hear what they talk about in rural area because pumps and wells are big in rural Arizona, that communities that aren't on the CAP or aren't pumping directly out of Yuma. They anticipate Kingman could be out of groundwater in 55 years.
Hmm.
And then the Wilcox, the Sulphur Springs Valley, and the big community that they're looking to put up in Sierra Vista and that controversy.
I saw the San Pedro River. The feds are still saying the 75,000 on the San Pedro River. I don't know.
Yeah.
Water.
Yeah.
When you go look at the Casa Grande Indian ruins, I mean, that's the reason they moved on. they built too big for the water supply they had, and be interesting. Yeah. And you know, that's where the opportunity is. Opportunities in adversity. And there's going to be plenty of opportunities. And there's some things coming out. We're going to go tour it next week. There is a thing, a new device you can put on your roof.
Oh, yeah,
that condenses the moisture in it and filters it for your drinking water. So if everyone's drinking water suddenly started coming from just the moisture that's in the natural air, you know, what does that do to our water supply and relieving the pressure off of that? But then a lot of people ask, well, what happens when we make a dry Arizona air even drier? What's the adverse effect of that? Mm-hmm. So interesting topic, water in Arizona.